Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Sometimes one wishes that one could make an offering that would be of help. And sometimes one gets maybe a little cue from the Eternal. I hope that's what I'm following up on. But I'm going to do a little talk on Sangha today. And, well, of course, I talk a lot about Sangha. And Sangha's been certainly, as it is for many people, a real, key part of my life and my training, and I want to just talk a little bit about Sangha. When I think of places in the scriptures where Sangha is mentioned, I always think of two things. One of them is explicitly talking about Sangha. That's Great Master Dogen's little thing on Sangha that is from one of his talks and excerpted really from one of his lectures to his monks. And it's kind of put in the Shishogi in excerpted form. And it's a little chapter in the Shishogi on Sangha. The other one doesn't use the word Sangha, but it's about Sangha. And together they really tell you what Sangha really is, if you know how to read it. And the second one is in the Litany of the Great Compassionate One. So I'll talk a little bit about both those scriptural references to Sangha and then just to where it goes. First, let's just talk a little bit about what the situation is that leads to Sangha. And it's kind of like this is an essential part of your training and enlightenment kit. What do you need to have a Sangha happen? You need a mess. You need a mess. The first requirement for Sangha is a mess. Generally speaking, the requirement for a little Sangha is a little mess. And the requirement for a really big Sangha is a really big mess. And that's what you need. So, what is the kind of teaching, practical teaching, one can take away from this? First, what practical conclusion one can draw from this? It's really helpful to look at messes with an enlightened eye rather than a deluded eye. I'm not saying that's always easy to do. Sometimes it's incredibly difficult and very, very painful. But from the more enlightened point of view, a view that's beyond the opposites, however big the mess is, it's the opportunity, the potential for enlightenment. And indeed, there's so many stories in religion, and so many of these stories are about people in a terrible fix, a desperate situation, spiritually. And not always just spiritually, just everything's falling apart. So you need a mess. And I'm not going to go so far as to say the bigger mess, the mess, the better. Because I'm not out there kind of waving my flag at the bull to come charge at me. None of us enjoys the messes. None of us enjoys them. And if we find ourselves in a mess, then it's what we do from where we are now. With our feet in the mess, it's what we do now, from where we are now, that matters, and not what happened yesterday or 10 minutes ago. It's what happened, or a year ago, or a lifetime ago. It's what we do now that matters, and that's what Sangha is about. Sangha is about the what we do now. What can you do when you find yourself in a mess? So the first thing, the first point of this talk is give the mess some respect, whatever it is. Give the spiritual pain, the external complications, the embarrassment, whatever it is, give it some respect. And we do that by sitting still with it and by bowing to it. Everything that happens is for my good, period. There's nothing that qualifies that statement. Everything that happens is for my good. There's nothing that says, but, you know, when such and such happens, that's not for my good. If you really want to train in Buddhism, this is the gateway. Kohei Zenji told her master, all acceptance is a gateless gate. Well, it's no big difficulty to accept heaven, for crying out loud. It's hell that's hard to accept. The second thing is that especially in our coming out of our Western tradition, our Western upbringing, education, Western religious tradition, we tend to gravitate towards a mea culpa attitude about our part of making a mess. And we tend to gravitate towards trying to hold other people accountable who've made the mess. This is the way they talk about it nowadays. Accountability, they really mean get at them. If they've made the mess, get them. That's what that means. It's a sweet-talking way of expressing vengefulness. Really what it is. And I watch the way these kind of modern kind of ideological terms that are so much influenced by psychology, most of them. I watch the way they're used in the media and the like, and this is the way it's always used. Man, the accountability thing is grim. Because people want to get at them. Hold them accountable. The mea culpa is blaming oneself. The accountability thing is blaming someone else. These do not help you do a sangha. If there is blame of oneself or of others, then part of the sangha, a big part of the sangha, is letting go of the blame, putting that down. And that is very hard for people coming out of our background to put down. It's extremely hard. And it has to be done. Third mass used to describe Sangha as self-forgiveness. But if a mess was made from something other than just the blame, which is often the case, then if there is the blame in the way, we won't actually see clearly what to do until the blame is laid down, surrendered up. Whether it's self-blame or blame of others, it doesn't matter. It'll tend to be swinging between the two because these are the opposites, self-blame and blame of others. But it's got to be laid down. One cannot see clearly while one is in blame, and that's just the way it is. While one is doing blame is a better way to put it. Because blame is something that is done, sustained through the wrongful use of the will, non-perceptual use of the will. That's the second poem, point, lay down the blame. The third point is that in a true act of Sangha, the heart is rising, not sinking. And there is a, however great the darkness of the mess, when a true Sangha is happening, there is an unshakable, indestructible brightness within it. And it's an upward-looking thing, not a downward-looking thing. And that upward-looking thing comes from the heart rising, turning towards the eternal for help. And from the fact that that brightness is itself the brightness of the Buddha nature, which cannot be tarnished by any action of ours or anyone else's. So the third point of this talk is to do a true act of Sangha, we need help. And if we're just, however sincere our intentions, if we're just relying on ourselves alone, it doesn't happen. Rur Messi used to say, talk about eventually getting to the point where you throw your hands in the air and the brain gives up the fight and the struggle to be the boss. A true full act of Sangha is the brain ceasing to try to be the boss and the heart finally being given a chance to get a word in edgeways. So I want to just show you now how these points are exemplified in the Shishogi and in the Litany of the Great Compassionate One, just very briefly. Here's how Dogen describes doing an act of contrition. How does it begin? He says, "May all the Buddhas and ancestors who have become enlightened have compassion upon us. Free us from the obstacle of suffering which we have inherited from our past existence and lead us in such a way that we may share the merit that fills the universe." What is that? That's a cry for help. The Buddhas and ancestors, when Dogen talks of the Buddhas and ancestors, that's the eternal. Those who represent the eternal. May all the Buddhas and ancestors who have become enlightened have compassion upon us. It's crying out to Kanzeon. Another way to put it. In the Western tradition, it's crying out to the mercy of Jesus or Mary. Those are the ones most often. And then it'll sometimes be another one of the saints, you know. But it doesn't matter. You know, it's that the heart turns toward what is real and true, the source of help. And this happens naturally. And if something in us is trying to do an act of true contrition, an act of true contrition is needed, and we've got the kind of confusion in the way, and we're being driver's seaty about it, remembering to ask for help at the beginning is very helpful. You're not doing it on your own alone. And this really helps with that mea culpa thing where a true Sangha is trying to happen and it does a spiral into blame instead. One kind of grabs it and takes it into blame instead. Blame of oneself. In asking for help, the heart rising to the eternal, then it's not just you on your own. And the blame gets surrendered with everything else then. Don't beat yourself up thinking that Sangha. And look at the upward looking thing in this. He says, for they, the Buddhas and ancestors, were in the past as we are now, and we will be as they in the future. It's upward looking. It's not beating yourself over the head, my fault, my most grievous fault, you know. Beating yourself up so that you won't make this same mistake again, and so that you'll then be virtuous and won't make these messes. But when you beat yourself up, you make sure you're going to make, if not that mistake, some other mistake, because you make yourself more desperate inside. You know, what is it really? It's when you beat yourself up, you feel less loved. And the more you feel separate from love, the more desperate you are for love. And all of our mistakes come down to serious spiritual mistakes. They always come down to grasping after love in some way. As the kind of ad for the movie I saw when I was young, Looking for Mr. Goodbar, this ghastly movie but really good teaching with Diane Keaton in it, where she's this woman who's desperately looking for love, and she goes to bars and picks up guys and eventually gets killed by one of them. But a really good portrayal of just sheer, pure spiritual desperation. The ad for the movie said, looking for love in all the wrong places. That's just what we all do. We look for love in the wrong places. Then we make a mess out of it, and then we beat ourselves up. And that makes us more desperate for the love, and there you get the cycle of suffering going. A cycle of negative reinforcement, negative causation. Making ourselves more desperate, grasping more desperately, making a bigger mess, making ourselves more desperate, coming down harder on ourselves. Sangha cuts through the whole thing. Release it all into the hands of the Buddhas and ancestors, into the hands of Kanzan, into the hands of the Eternal. Release it all into the hands of the Eternal. And stand upright, sit upright, and look up with let your heart look up. That's the way into Sangha. How does the Litany of the Great Compassion want to express it? The part dealing with Sangha comes very early in the scripture. It says, all is defilement, defilement, earth, earth. That's the mess. That's the mess. Everywhere I look, I mean, what's that saying? We've recited it, many of us, thousands of times. Think about what that's saying. Everywhere I look, there's dirt. Everywhere I look, there's pain. Everywhere I look, there's darkness. All is defilement, defilement, earth, earth. What's the next line? Do the work within my heart. O great victor, I hold on, hold on. To Indra the Creator, I cry. Whatever will help. My cry goes out to the universe for help. And that's the gateway into enlightenment. It's called enlightenment because there's a darkness that gets enlightened. The greater the darkness, the greater potential for enlightenment. This is a completely non-dualistic way of understanding the way the world works. And it's just the teachings that we recite every day. The next part of it is confession. And the way Dogen describes it in the classic verse that we all know, but I'll read it anyway. All the evil committed by me is caused by beginningless greed, hate, and delusion. All the evil is committed by my body, speech, and mind. My body, speech, and thoughts. I now confess everything wholeheartedly. The primary meaning of confession, or in this sense, is not going to another person and doing confession. Although sometimes it really helps. Sometimes it really comes up as good to make confession to another person. And of course, as a priest, one hears that and one does it sometimes. I've certainly done it plenty. Sometimes it's apologizing to someone. Sometimes it's just saying to someone, oh, I recognize I've been behaving in an inappropriate way. But sometimes saying it to another person helps us accept it and turn it around. But that's not the primary meaning. The primary meaning is that one opens the heart to the eternal in acceptance of what one has done. Without the blame, saying that all the evil committed by me is caused by beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, it's just acknowledging the factual reality of things. It's not blame. Just saying, oops, did it again. Look at the causes. In a full act of Sangha, the cause is seen to some degree or other. I say to some degree or other because you never see the ultimate first cause. And who cares anyway? You know, that's so far back. But there is always given some insight into causation, the causation. Sometimes it's just very simply one stops in mid-act and one realizes, you know, this is not what I want to do. And one drops it. And that's just a little sangha there. Sometimes that's a very big sangha, depending on the person and the circumstances. Really little and big ain't in it, are they? Sangha, sangha. So the confession is acknowledgement of one's own responsibility for one's own actions, that one has done one's own actions, and that one has done them out of a motive that has been confused, that has been influenced by confusion. And then, from there on, then it's, okay, so how can I get it, how can I do better now? And again, please help me. Please help me. This is not New Year's resolution, you know, because all the resolutions in the world, especially when they're coming out of guilt, they're just, no one's questioning the good intentions of that, but it doesn't really work very well, if at all. Habit energy of karma is far too powerful to deal with just on our own. This is why deep spiritual conversion requires deep solitary prayer. Whether that be what we call meditation, whether that be contemplative prayer, whether that be some other form of prayer. I say solitary because not because you always do it on your own, but because no one does it for you. And you can sit in a meditation hall or a church full of people praying, and you cannot pray. No one does it for you. Something we have to choose. Each time we do it, we have to choose. But what is prayer? It's the heart turned towards God. The essence of meditation and prayer are exactly the same thing. It's in the heart turned towards the eternal that perceptual truth begins to be recognized, that the perceptual path opens up before us. Sangha leads to a deeper taking of the precepts. Taking the precepts to heart. What are the precepts? Well, the precepts are just describing what works by saying what doesn't work. And what works is to cease from certain things and to do other things. To cease from certain kinds of actions and do other kinds of actions. So the precepts are telling you what is the thing to cease from. The paramitas are telling you what to focus on in a positive way. So if you take one of the precepts, for example, do not be mean in giving either dharma or wealth. Don't be mean-spirited, stingy. Do not clutch things to you as if they're your salvation, external things. Well, what's the paramita that goes with that? Generosity. So that's the precept about generosity. Take another precept. You know, do not kill. The first of the 10 precepts. What's a paramita that goes with that? Well, compassion. I don't remember whether compassion is one of the paramitas listed in the paramitas or not, but that's an obvious one. Have compassion for life. Respect. Have respect for life. So Sangha turns you around and points you in the right direction. And then you still have to do the walking in that right direction. Reverend Master sometimes said, when I was a young monk, she'd sometimes say, well, meditation is every minute Sangha. Every time you bring your awareness back to where you are, right now, you're turning back in the right direction. Every time you bring your awareness back to the present moment. And as your spiritual life deepens, you begin to realize what really it is that you're holding to when you do that. Because that bringing your attention back to the present moment is the beginning way, one of the beginning ways to talk about holding fast to the Lord of the house, which is a fuller way of talking about it, the deeper way. It's the same thing. It's just that in the beginning one doesn't know, and maybe for a long time in some cases, one doesn't know that's what one is doing. But at a later date, one knows that's what one is doing. Hold fast to the Lord of the house. Through all the changing conditions of life. What is it that Sangha leads to? Dogen says, contrition before the Buddhas brings purification and salvation, true conviction and earnest endeavor. He also said that although karmic consequence for evil acts is inevitable, at some time during the three periods of it could be referring to past, present, and future, but I think that it's referring to kind of the present, immediate time we're in, the near future, and the distant future. But anyway, at any rate, although karmic consequence for evil acts is inevitable at some time, karma always comes due eventually, contrition makes it easier to bear by bringing freedom and immaculacy. And this is true. Contrition doesn't, Sangha doesn't remove karmic consequence, but it lets you face the consequences in an upright way. Now, I saw a good example of that on the TV. I was watching a show just yesterday. I caught a bit of a show about this tragic situation where this American submarine, this happened back in the 90s, I think, American submarine came up underneath, was surfacing, it came up underneath a fishing boat. It came up underneath a fishing boat, a Japanese fishing boat, and it sunk the boat, and like most or all of the crew died. And this poor skipper, but I can't even say that because he's not a man you could feel sorry for. I have never seen a more a better example of what a true Sangha does. This man, he took complete responsibility for the act. He recognized he'd made a terrible mistake. He was not court-martialed, but his career ended there, basically, after the subsequent investigation. It was understood that it was an honest mistake, but still it was a mistake. He let himself become distracted or something, and hadn't done the necessary checks that he should have done. And they actually were interviewing this show a couple of three times, went back and interviewed this man, and you could see in his face that. Every mark of a profound, true Sangha. Complete taking responsibility, but he didn't say a word of self-blame. Complete taking responsibility. He made a journey to Japan and met with the families of the people. And they showed him, showed him talking to the people whose relatives had died in that. And it was just utter dignity, inexpressible, really. It was just like pure Buddha nature coming out of that magnificent human being. There was not a bunch of, he wasn't like carrying on emotionally, he wasn't emotional, he was just, you could see it. It profoundly changed his life, and he was dealing with the consequences to the very best of his ability. So the karmic consequence for anything that we do is going to happen, and contrition makes it easier to bear by bringing freedom and immaculacy. Dogen also says, by this act of recognition of our past behavior and our contrition, therefore, we open the way for the Buddhas and ancestors to help us naturally. And this is the wonderful thing about a true Sangha. It opens the way for the love of the eternal to flow in wherever there is the pain, whatever the nature of the pain is. There's no grief, there's no self-judgment, there's no anguish of the heart that this love will not heal, soothe, mend, transform, above all transform and convert. What are the lines in the Litany of the Great Compassion when that follow? It was all is defilement, earth, do the work within my heart. O great victor, I hold on, to injure the Creator I cry. Move, my defilement-free one. Come, here, a joy springs up in me. That's the lotus flowering right in the midst of hell. And the whole latter half of the Litany of the Great Compassion One is one great, is a great hymn or song of faith and devotion and gratitude. Because one knows what one's been saved from. Mass used to say, this is a religion. This is not psychology. It's not a self-improvement program. It's not a legal system. It's not government. This is contemplative religion at its deepest level, what we're practicing. The instructions are here on how to do it. And the best thing we can do is ignore the way the world attempts to do it. Ignore the psychology. Ignore the cultural confusion. And focus on what we've actually been taught by River Master. And River Master has just passed on to us what was passed on to her. And what she learned from her own experience. I had the very great privilege of seeing Reverend Master, being with Reverend Master when she did that at every minute Sangha. And sometimes it was clearly Sangha that was being happening there. River Master really studied herself. She really paid attention to what she was doing and what the consequences were. She really worked on herself. And she did it with a light and a joyful spirit, not as some kind of grim, quasi-military kind of self-improvement regimen. And she always kept, and this is the last thing I want to say, she always kept her focus on her own training, not on other people. I've been saying a lot lately, just do your own training. Don't worry about what other people are doing. You don't do Sangha for someone else, you do Sangha for yourself. No one can do Sangha for someone else. Sangha is done by individuals when all conditions ripen in their life and in their training. It's not done en masse. We're responsible for our own lives, for what we have done, for what we do now, for what we will do in the future. We're not responsible for what other people do. For what other people have done. If we have done things that have hurt other people, then we can do Sangha about that. You can't repair that damage yourself. You can only do something about what you do in the future, in this present moment, in the future. Sometimes it is good to apologize to someone. Sometimes it is good to do something to make restitution in some way. Notice I'm using the "it is good" phrase. If you try to go on some kind of formula here, you'll just end up acting out of guilt. And I've when I was a young monk, I would many times do a sangha, and so often it would be influenced, would do or try to do sangha, but I would be influenced by the degree of my guilt. I would sometimes go apologize, and I was really apologizing to get rid of my own guilt. But what I learned with time was first sit still and deal with my own self-blame and get a handle on my own spiritual state. Give the Eternal a chance to get a word in edgeways with me before I rush off to try to unburden myself of something. Another way you might put it is, if you got to unburden yourself, first of all, try unburdening to the Eternal. Because you're less likely to just complicate life. And some of us have had that experience, you know, where you go to try to set something right and it just makes more confusion. So, as a first step, you know, along with the asking for help, try sitting still. This is the Buddha, this is Dharma, this is the Sangha.